Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
You know, in most murder cases, we're chasing the question, who did it? In the Brian Koberger case, we've known the who for a long time. The real question now, the one that keeps people up at night, is why did he do it? And maybe the most unsettling, what did he hope to gain from it? We're going to have a conversation here with New York Times bestselling author Howard Bloom, author of the book When the Night Comes Falling, now available on paperback with a brand new afterword, so be sure to check that out. And retired FBI Special Agent and Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, Robin Dreek. We're diving into the psychology of performance-based murder, not just a revenge killing, not just a fantasy fulfilled, but the possibility that Koberger viewed this crime as his origin story, a twisted attempt at infamy and academic immortality. Because when you look at Koberger's history, the breadcrumbs are everywhere. His obsessive criminology studies, his fascination with serial killers, the questionnaire that he sent to prison inmates asking how they got away with murder. He wasn't just studying crime, he was internalizing it, rehearsing it. Then there's the deeply unsettling connection to his professor, Dr. Catherine Ramsland, one of the foremost experts on serial killers, someone who literally wrote the books on this subject. What Bloom suggests here is chilling, that Koberger may have committed these murders not only to prove he could do it, but to impress her, to enter her academic orbit, not as a student, but as a case study. It's a kind of motivation that twists admiration into obsession and turns a search for meaning into a craving for legacy. Howard lays out the facts, including Ramsland's early call to the family, her ongoing memoir chapter, and her eventual admission that she'd consider writing about him since the beginning. And the question now isn't just, will Koberger talk? It's, will anyone give him a stage? So I asked Howard, is this what Koberger always wanted? Not just to kill, but to be written about, to become the beast, and then make sure the world never stopped watching.
Yeah, you know, when you first came out with that, Howard, we really took a good deep dive on this one, Tony and I did, because it was a really interesting observation. And it's kind of goes to what I was telling you before, is that, you know, someone that has your reps with this kind of focus and all the data points you're bringing in, observations are not meaningless. And so I kind of took that as him trying to impress her was, it's an emotion. And so it's him being devoid of emotion. He's incapable of it, right? But you said something that was really interesting right there. You said, become the beast. And so I was curious, if you agreed or not, do you think part of his goal, because I think there's multiple motivations he's having here. People are always looking for motives, and I don't think it's ever clear with just one. I think there's multiple things he's getting from this. Do you think his plan A was to maybe study these murders side by side with Dr. Ramsland, and plan B with since plan A didn't work out, he will become the subject of the investigations that'll be done by Ramsland and others?
Well, if you want to make a plan C, I think his ambition someday would have been to written a book about
himself,
about the Idaho student murders, and he would have given, as a forensic psychologist, he would have given his thoughts. As for Dr. Ramsland, they have an interesting symbiotic relationship, in the sense, when I first wrote about her, I pointed out that she had called the Koberger family just a couple of days after he'd been arrested. Koberger had only been in Pennsylvania for 4 days. She says it wasn't directly afterwards, but there was only a 4-day period. So it's a very small time span where she reached them. At this point, the Kobergers were not taking any calls. They were feeling besieged. They feel the world had closed in on them. And now they get a call from their son's esteemed professor. So they take it. Dr. Ramsland has said she was just calling out of concern. She said, I was wrong to imply that she had any ulterior motive. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. Did I get that wrong? Perhaps. But she also said quite specifically that I was wrong when she said that she had acted as an advisor to the family. However, lawyers who were involved with the case and legal people close to the case in Pennsylvania said that before they could meet with the parents, the parents told them, we have to first check with Dr. Ramsland. Maybe the parents were making that up. Maybe they never reached out to Dr. Ramsland. However, in her most recent interview, Dr. Ramsland was asked, would you like to write about Brian Koberger someday? Would you like to see him in prison? And she said, yes, and I've been thinking about this for 2.5 years, which would include the period, I would assume, 2.5 years ago, was when he was arrested, right after his arrest, when she first made her call, ostensibly only about concerns. So whether or not she was being completely candid about what happened, I certainly don't know, but those are the facts. And I think perhaps they suggest that she was being disingenuous or hadn't even realized yet in her mind that she was ready to write or would want to write about Koberger. I think at that point, she didn't believe necessarily that he was guilty. She said she didn't believe he was guilty until his alibi turned out not to be an alibi.
Do you think we're going to see, I mean, obviously we're going to see a lot of books. Obviously you have one of the best and one of the first that's been out there, When the Night Comes Falling. But do you think we're going to see some in the words of Koberger? Do you think Koberger is still going to write his book? There is no Son of Sam law there, but I imagine there's going to be some restrictions in terms of profiting off of something like this, for his part at least. I'm sure Catherine will probably see a book from at some point on this topic, but do you think we're going to see something in Koberger's own words explaining this, or do you think we're ever going to hear Koberger come out and reveal exactly what he did and why he did it?
I think part of the reason Koberger did this crime was to show that he was the smartest guy out there, that he was a criminal forensic psychologist who could beat the system, who was could put all the pieces together so that a way no one could crack the puzzle. He's going to be in jail for the rest of his life. He's 30 years old now. I think he's going to get pretty soon bored, and he's going to be at some point thinking, well, maybe I should do something. And I think people are going to be knocking on his door. I think they're, or his, you know, clanking on his cell door. Mm-hmm. They're going to want to talk to him. And I think out of sheer boredom, for no other reason, he will say, sure, let's talk. Let's try to make something happen. I think he will reach out to Dr. Ramsland. I think there will be some collaboration between them. Dr. Ramsland has said that at this moment, she is only writing a chapter in her memoir about her student, Brian Koberger. That's mm-hmm. all she's said she's writing now. Perhaps there will someday be more. Will it be the real story that Brian will tell? Who knows?
Yeah.
I think he would want to get one version, probably a self-aggrandizing version of the truth out there. And that's sort of the problem with the recent court plea deal. The allocution is very vague. He has to say something, I imagine, on the July 23rd, when he has to appear before Judge Hippler and answer a few questions. I think there'll be, you know, terse, vague answers. We won't get the specifics or the follow-ups that are necessary. And it'll be interesting to see how Judge Hippler deals with this. Will he say, okay, fine, let's move on? Or say perhaps, whoa, wait a minute. We need answers. These families need answers. The taxpayers of the state of Idaho, who have so far contributed more than $3.6 million to this case, they need answers too for all the money and time that's been put in.
Robin?
Howard, every time I listen to this in this plea deal, it rips you apart, because everything you see and knowing Koberger's brain, even to the limited extent we do, says he won and Taylor won. He is going to, you know, as one of the fathers said, you know, he gets to continue to breathe and talk and tell his story and live the only thing he's ever craved, and that is grandiosity and notoriety. That is all that motivates people that are high on psychopathy. But with all that being said, I was really curious. You've lived this life for a good couple of years now, a lot of in-depth, kind of out of the mainstream of what you typically write about. What's been the lasting impact on you throughout this that you're going to take away from this that people generally don't even know?
Well, the thing that shocked me the most, as you said, this is different from what I usually write about. I tell true stories, character-driven stories, some from history, some of from espionage, whatever. But the true crime community, once I started writing about that, there's so much rancor. There's so much animosity. I mean, I've had death threats. The people at HarperCollins who published my book have had death threats. This is a story about a murderer, and yet people feel that somehow it's, you disagree with something someone's saying, it's the proper response is to target his life or to threaten to target his life. That astounds me. I've sort of gone out of the academic circle that I was once writing in and gone into, you know, the belly of the true crime beast.
Would you do it again?
I enjoy the experience of trying to put pieces together in a puzzle. You know, that's what I did in my career at the Times, at Vanity Fair. I try to take stories that are character-driven and find the narrative that ties it all together into a whole. That's what I tried to do in this book. So, you know, I'm writing about something completely different now for my next book. But would I go back to another true crime case? Depends on the case and the personalities of the people involved and how large was the mystery.
There's a new afterword in your book, When the Night Comes Falling, now that the paperback edition is coming out here in July, or has come out here in July, available anywhere anyone gets books. And I highly recommend, I did the audiobook right away. Robin did the same thing. What's new in the afterword? Where do you stand today? Like, what has changed in your mind from when you began this project writing the book and when it was first published to now the new afterword in the paperback?
Well, in the afterword, I discuss how, and it almost seems ironic in light of last week's events, how while Koberger is guilty, I thought his team and Taylor could raise enough doubts that would allow him to perhaps beat the case by planting reasonable doubt in at least the mind of one juror. I've never had any real doubts of his guilt, that he was the man who did it. I did have doubts that the prosecution could win their case. But after the alibi was thrown out, after the ultimate perpetrator theory was thrown out, I think the prosecution had an open and shut case, pretty much. They could have had a big victory if they had the will. I think they made a coolly pragmatic and expedient decision to just let's get this over with and move on. I go back to the metaphor of the house where the murders occurred, how they decided to just let's rip that down, let's concrete over the space, and maybe people will forget about it and life in Moscow and at the university can go forward without that memory hanging over us. And, you know, that's wishful thinking. That's not a reality. That town, that state, the parents, everyone is going to be branded by this, these events forever. Again, as I say, this isn't a story about survivors, only about victims.
So let's be brutally honest here. Koberger may have lost his freedom, but in some ways, he still got exactly what he wanted. Attention, intrigue, headlines, and now, silence. A deal that kept him alive, kept him enigmatic, and gave him the one thing he seemed to crave above all other, control over the narrative. And make no mistake, this wasn't a spontaneous act. This wasn't someone who snapped. This was a man who studied how to kill, researched how to get away with it, and may have been planning on how to spin it later. And the most disturbing piece, he might have done it all with an endgame of becoming his own case study. Howard laid it out with unnerving clarity. Koberger may have intended to write a book about these murders himself. Not out of guilt, not out of remorse, but out of narcissism. He wanted to be both the killer and the expert, the blade and the biographer. Then there's Dr. Catherine Ramsland. Whether or not she ever collaborates with him or even opens his letters, the connection is already written in the public imagination. The student who wanted to outdo the master, the protege, who in his own delusion thought the only way to be taken seriously was to become the monster. Robin called it for what it is, grandiosity in its purest form, a textbook trait of a psychopath. Koberger wanted to be the smartest guy in the room, even if that room was a prison cell. And that's why this plea deal stings so badly, because there's no cross-examination, no deep interrogation, no courtroom moment where the mask drops. Just the slow creeping possibility that one day we'll get his version, carefully written, curated, and entirely self-serving. In the end, we're left with victims who don't get answers, families who don't get closure, and a public that's left wondering if justice really means silence. As Howard said, this wasn't just a crime, it was a performance. And for a man obsessed with legacy, the real punishment would have been obscurity. But now, his name is etched in headlines, books, and yes, podcasts like this one. Let me know your thoughts in the comment section of this video on YouTube. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Brewski wherever you get podcasts so you don't miss any of our coverage on this case and the many that we cover for you right here. And hit subscribe on those podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it may be. Again, so you don't miss in or don't miss out on any of that. And we'd love your opinion on YouTube. So please do join us there. My name's Tony Brewski. We will talk again real soon.
Want true crime coverage all day? Every day, press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today and get the latest cases delivered right to your feed.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only. In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.